It is now 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. You are listening to KALX Berkeley. And I am so happy to have in the studio with me a special guest. This does not happen that often, but it is happening today. Mark Montgomery French, film music composer and music culture writer. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
Yeah. Good levels on that. So we are here to talk about a multimedia audiovisual talk that you have given before and you will give again. You want to tell us a little bit about that to start?
Yes, it's called All Your Favorite Music is Probably Black. And it talks about all the genres of music that African Americans were involved in that they don't seem to be involved in very much now, like country. And I'm giving it twice, once February 1st at the Alameda Free Library. That's 2 p.m., free, all ages, and once again on February 23rd at the San Lorenzo Library, also at 2 o'clock, free, all ages.
Excellent. And I have had you on a different show here before during my other gig with Arts and Review. For another time that you did this talk, and we had such a good time talking and learning all about the secret and not so secret racist policies of various recording industries and record stores and maybe some radio station libraries, but certainly not this one. And just talking about certain songs that were classified one thing instead of the other thing when they sound just like the first thing.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So I love Amoeba. I would never besmirch Amoeba.
But, me neither. I met my husband there.
But I find it interesting that unless something changed today, if you go to find Purple Rain, which is a massive rock song, Purple Rain is not in the soundtrack section, which, okay, but in the soul section, along with everything else Prince has ever done. Even though Prince is by far one of the biggest rock stars we've ever seen. A guitar shaped after his name, which was a squiggle, that's pretty a rock star move. Mm-hmm. Plus all of his clothing, his pants, his attitude, his whole Paisley Park. But someone cited at some point he was a black dude, therefore black dudes go into R&B or later hip hop, and or sometimes world music. But conversely, if let's say Paul Simon does a whole album of South African Township Jive, that album does not end up under South African, it ends up under rock.
Mm-hmm. And that's a whole other conversation. Well, and now I'm stuck on the idea of Prince doing rap. Did Prince ever actually do any hip-hop?
Prince?
He did everything.
He talked in rhythm. He occasionally had other people who would rap on his material. Mm-hmm. I would not say those were his best material. But actually, when Prince would rap on Irresistible. I'm not going to say the word. I love your license, but he would.
I don't think anyone's ever said they love our FCC license. Thank you for that. I also just love our FCC license.
It's so clear and in depth. There were songs in which he would talk on the beat, and so it was sort of proto rap. Yeah. Whenever it seems to be some black people who start a different type of music, it tends to be fed somewhat, watered, and then completely erased with white people, and they're left to do cleanup.
Mm-hmm.
Take punk, for example, in which one of the bigger bands to ever create hardcore was Bad Brains out in D.C. in 78, 79, 80. And everybody in punk in D.C. totally knows that they're fantastic. Other people in the music industry love them. They actually got nominated for the Rock Hall of Fame a couple of years ago, which is amazing. They didn't make it. I think Chicago got in that year. speaking of punk, but it's to the point now where only with the Afro-punk movement that's arrived in the last 10 years has really been any sort of consciousness that black people were in punk at the beginning and have always been around. Usually they're like the one drummer in the back, like Dead Kennedys, or they're just looked at as being, why are you here?
Mm-hmm.
How could you possibly be involved with this? And never the concept of, we help start this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why the scenes as well, at least, when I was coming up, were overwhelmingly white, because there's no representation on stage. I mean, I feel like when I was growing up, it was like, oh, there was these the four black and brown kids that hung out in the scene. And I would, I, 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 you know, as a woman, didn't feel that welcome in those scenes either, because I didn't see myself on stage. So I can't even imagine, you know, how unwelcoming that would be unless you were at a Bad Brain show. Should we listen to a Bad Brain
song? I think we should.
I think it's a great idea. All right. Let's see. What record is it on? That one.
That one.
Yeah. Do you want to introduce the song?
Yeah. This is Soulcraft off their 1986 album called Quickness.
Yeah. With the, or with a?
With some.
With some.
A soupçon of.
Quickness. All right. Here we go. On your calyx. All right, Bad Brains.
Bad Brains.
Bad Brains with Soulcraft. They've got. Let's not talk about. They're a little problematic on their own.
Yes,
but it doesn't take away from the important legacy and important part they played in punk rock.
That is true.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about can we talk about the history of this talk? Like, how did you get inspired to do this?
So I've been a musician for years, and when I was starting in the 90s, and I would walk in with my acoustic guitar, and there would be a sound guy going, "Oh, like Richie Havens?" And I went, "No." And then the black lead singer with dreads would walk in, and they'd go, "Reggae?" And they would go, "No." This would happen constantly. And I'm in San Francisco, where you think in more open environments. And we ended up getting two white guys as our rhythm section, and that really confused people. Even in the Bay Area, where there's lots of music, it was still kind of segregated, unless you were playing ska, mm-hmm. but by default had white people and black people in it. It tended to be less of a mix than you would think. So this was always in the back of my head. Well, black musicians have been around doing everything all the time. And as I had friends who had record deals, at a friend, a band will go nameless, mm-hmm. But they had four white guys with one black lead singer, and the only singles the label wanted to play was when the white guitarist happened to sing one or two songs. Those immediately became the singles they wanted to push because he was white.
Wow.
And they would ask, like, you know, but there aren't even our main songs, and they were proud of all their songs, but so you start to pull back and realize there's a plan at hand in which, and it's not just labels, it's not just promoters, it's a whole system that bit by bit is trying to promote a specific ideal of what all kinds of rock music should be and who they are for. And if you don't, by DNA, are not part of that look and feel, you get pushed back and back and back and back and back. I remember when Living Color came out in 89, and their story was that Mick Jagger saw them produce their demo tape, ran around the industry trying to get them signed, and really only signed them to a sister label, the Rolling Stones. Mm. It was back when he was, you know, Mick Jagger.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And Mick Jagger, actually, on a side note, done a lot. The Rolling Stones have always done a lot to get black artists that they like to open for them. Mm. So Prince's first big white audience was the 81 tour for the Stones. And the audience hated Prince and threw fruit at him, but he appreciated the chance. When Stevie Wonder went from being Little Stevie Wonder to being the guy doing Superstition, mm-hmm. he allowed him to open up for them. So, you know, unless you have a really powerful sponsor somewhere in the music industry, you tend to get left behind and squashed and removed from history. So I thought, well, what can I do to have all this knowledge and not just be angry? I'll talk it out.
Yeah, talk it out. It's therapy. I remember when there was a Lollapalooza that was with that Living Color and Body Count.
Body Count was
on that, and I remember it being like, to quote one of my favorite podcasts, "We fixed racism." Like, I was like, "Wow, look at this! It's so diverse." And then, like, you know, as it turned out nothing was fixed. so powerful.
That was. I was thinking about Lollapalooza on the way in here. Actually, I was thinking that was like the anti-mainstream show, but how many people from that lineup kind of became mainstream? You have Trent Reznor winning Oscars, mm-hmm. Gibby Haynes, now a young adult author.
Wait. Gibby Haynes is a young adult author?
Yes.
We're going to talk about this off mic. I mean, it's not what we're here for, but maybe you could come back and
yes.
talk about that.
Ice-T has been a TV detective for almost two decades now.
Yes, on SVU.
And so it's just interesting how that show managed to just break and squeeze people into the mainstream mm-hmm. that would never have been there before.
Yeah. Yeah. But lots who weren't. Although on the East Bay side, I mean, you've got Green Day who were on. So I was living on the East Coast at the time, and I saw the first Lollapalooza. Mm. And they were the first band on East Coast. And so they were the band that was playing when we were in line to get in. Basically.
Right. Here it was Rollins Band.
Yeah. And anyway, we are definitely getting off topic. But I was thinking about when you were talking about a band that was all white with a black singer. I think of Love from the 60s in L.A., which, you know, I always wondered why they weren't bigger. And, you know, I've heard various things. And one of them is because they had a black singer. And one of them was because he was afraid to tour. So I don't know how much of a factor was for either of those.
And imagine, you know, your Elektra Records, you have Love and you have The Doors.
Mm-hmm.
And one's black, still love that band. One's white, one's giving you issues, and one is Jim Morrison saying, "I will do anything you need me to do this year."
Right. Well, including getting arrested a bunch on stage and all that. Yeah, good publicity.
So, but it's funny, when I saw Hootie and the Blowfish for the first time, mm-hmm. I was almost amazed. And when they became so popular, I was doubly amazed because although I'm not a fan of the band, for them to sell, I think, 12 million copies of their record meant they were actually more popular than racism for a small sliver of time.
Again, it's just, we fixed it. No. And also, and this is a very American problem, obviously, because maybe not obviously, but
it is. Otis Redding mentioned when he first toured England, his albums were big there. They didn't really know he was black because he wasn't on the album covers, but Northern Soul was in the kind of right. Soul was popular. They go over after coming off an American tour, and they're amazed because there's no segregated venues.
Wow.
And there were black and white people dancing together, mm-hmm. and they were so energized. They basically took that energy to Monterey Pop. So the fact that he was so amped during that festival was basically he had recently just come from England and went, this is how we're going to rock this audience. Because by that point, Otis Redding had never played to a majority hippie audience or white audience in America at all. That was his first time.
That's amazing. I am going to have to pause and read the campus calendar. I just realized.
Yes.
It's 1:15.
Let's do it.
We're going to read the campus calendar, and then we're going to talk about the next record we're going to play.
Yes, we are.
I'm pointing the wrong direction. It's over here. Because I know nothing about this, which is super exciting. But anyway, it's time for some people's favorite part of the Agapantha show. I'm looking at you, Christina, if you're listening. Every day we highlight a couple of events of general interest on the UC Berkeley campus. This is the campus calendar for today, Saturday, January 25th, 2020. Shorts by Agnes Varda, Program 2, Places and Faces. In the 64 years before her first and final films, Agnes Varda created an exceptional career as a photographer, filmmaker, and artist. Active until the end of her life at age 90, Varda was a true force of inspiration who touched many through her poignant films and thoughtful artistry. This collection of short works finds Varda observing people, places, and spaces from France to Iran. Tomorrow, January 26th at 1:30 p.m. at the Pacific Film Archive. Also, The Straight Story. This tender film is David Lynch's surprising follow-up to Lost Highway. It defies all audience expectations of what is Lynchian. Longtime character actor and ex-stuntman Richard Farnsworth, Kirk Douglas's double in Spartacus, earned an Oscar nomination as an elderly man, too impaired to have a driver's license, who instead drives his lawnmower across the Midwest to see his ailing brother. But a film can be quote-unquote straight and still be strange. Lynch himself said, "It may be my most experimental film," adding, "Tenderness can be just as abstract as insanity."
Check this out. Rated G.
Yeah, it doesn't say that here, but I believe you. Tomorrow, January 26th at 7 p.m., Pacific Film Archive here on the UC Berkeley campus. The campus calendar is read every day at 1:15 p.m. and 8:15 p.m. For information on many more events on campus, go on the web to events.berkeley.edu. I love that quote. Tenderness can be just as abstract as insanity. I think I'm going to just start saying that when I don't know what to say.
Shouldn't David Lynch do fortune cookie messages?
Yes. Oh, him and Werner Herzog.
Oh, right.
They should just, they can do like an exquisite corpse of fortune cookies. All right. Listen, Mr. Lynch, Mr. Herzog, get at us. Anyway, Mark.
Yes.
Would you mind introducing this next track?
Yes. This is a song called Clear from a band called Cybotron. Cybotron is really from a master of techno out in Detroit in the 80s. I know now we think of techno, we think of Moby or some guy with a big helmet on. But there are three guys known as the Belleville Three out of Detroit. Juan Atkins, Derek May, and Saunderson. I forgot his last name, but his first name. This is one of the first songs they did as it developed the sound that's become techno. And it came out on Fantasy Records, which actually means there is a local aspect to the song. It also was used, if you listen to it, it was used almost entirely in the Missy Elliott song, Lose Control. So,
cool. So
it's called Clear from Cybotron, and we can hear it any second now.
Right now. All right. On your calyx.
Ready, 1, 2, 3, 4. We'll be right back.
my shows again.
Oh, well, hello. Hi, we're back.
We are back.
I'm Agapanthus, and I'm here with Mark Montgomery French talking about how all of your and my favorite music is probably black. It is 1:23 p.m. on Saturday. You are listening to Kallax, and we just heard Cybotron with Clear. That was really cool. I like that a lot.
Good.
And we are we're running out of time with you. So I want to get into these next couple of songs we're going to hear.
All right. Well, here, let me announce a couple of things, and it'll be real quick. So I have a show called All Your Favorite Music is Probably Black. It's a talk. It's humorous, but talks about, well, why all music is probably black. Basically about African-American erasure out of genres that they helped start. And I'll be speaking at February 1st at 2 p.m. at the Alameda Free Library. Free for all ages, and I'll be speaking February 23rd at the San Lorenzo Library, also at 2 o'clock, also free for all ages. And if you want more about everything I just said, you can go to my website, which is mmfrench.com. That's mmfrench.com. You can sign up for the mailing list and see more dates and get more about what's all going on. I did want to... Somebody called up and asked about Juice WRLD. Why isn't Juice WRLD being played on rock stations when Juice WRLD is basically rock? Well, there's a bunch of people called promoters that labels hire to go get stations to try and play their music. They're generally broken down by race. So even though Juice WRLD got a big international hit looping a Sting song, rock radio has no intention of touching it because they don't know he exists. We do, but they don't. Ta-da.
Ta-da. Yeah, I didn't know. But that's okay, because I don't listen to a lot of mainstream radio, period, because, you know, that's why I'm a college radio DJ in 2020.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, leaning into my analog lifestyle about, why don't you just pick up a newspaper?
What's that?
Why do you need social media? Just hang out with your friends. Side note, I recently went on an international trip with a bunch of friends and my phone turned into a brick the first day, and which was really annoying. And by the end, that character I was just doing was, I was just sort of being that character.
Yeah.
And people didn't like it. So I'm not going to make it a regular part of my show. All right. Well, why don't we talk a little bit more? Well, let's see. We've got two more songs to play. I think let's hang out for that. I do want to touch on Old Town Road, though.
Old Town Road.
Because that has happened since the last time we sat down and talked together.
So there are cultural gatekeepers in all genres of music, and country is probably the oldest and strongest and most traditional.
And also the weirdest because of what passes for country these days.
Yes, lots of bros with dance beats and more obvious auto-tuning than on a typical pop or rap song. And so what happened with Old Town Road is a very modern day way of making a song. A young unknown rapper buys a beat from a European beat maker for $50, records over
on the dark web,
puts the song on TikTok where it blows up. It all of a sudden becomes asked by young people around the world, play that song, radio station. And they're like, where is it? We haven't been serviced it. We don't know what genre it is, but people keep asking for it. So they play it. Turns out there's an unlicensed sample from Nine Inch Nails, and Trent Reznor says, that's fine, just have the lawyer deal with it. So, you know, billions of streams later, country radio was the only radio station to not play it. It made pop, it made hip-hop stations, it made Rhythmic Top 40. Around the world, people played it. Country industry, it made the country chart for about 3 days, and then they actually erased it from the country chart, which is about as clear as African-American erasure as you possibly can get.
Wow.
Then Billy Ray Cyrus said, I'll cut a verse for you. The cat didn't like me back in the day. They probably won't like this either. And the song becomes one of the most streamed songs in the history of music.
Yep.
It was at number one longer than any other song in the history of music.
Yeah. We don't have it in the station, so I'm not going to play it, but I will say it's kind of a banger.
You probably know it. The CMA, Country Music Award Association, gave it an award, actually, a couple of months ago, probably out of embarrassment, and it was Event of the Year.
Oh.
They sometimes give to people who do duets. usually different generational people, but I think it was more like, okay, we concede. This was kind of a big thing.
Wow.
And the really sad part is they could have actually used that song to make the big country music bigger and broader internationally, because the song was big and broad internationally, but instead they look like Luddites.
Mm-hmm.
And again, compared to the other non-black music they play on the station with the same kind of beats and the same sort of productions.
Yep. Yeah, where it's like, you know, you have to check, like, tick off like three of five boxes. Like, is there a truck in it? Right?
Did the banjo sample?
There you go. Going from a song that we do not have here at the Calyx Library to a song that is one of the by a band that is one of the bedrocks of underground radio, college radio. Let's talk about why you asked me to pull a Velvet Underground song.
Okay. So there's always been the belief that one of the sonic architects of any band is the producer, especially if it's an alternative type band, because you're talking about a sound that's definitely outside the mainstream. And Velvet Underground was one of the premier bands in the 60s to have a kind of an outside sound that was promoted to the general public. And their producer was a guy named Tom Wilson, who was and still probably remains to be the only black in-house full-time A&R/producer in rock and roll.
Wow. Really? Every other, even to this day, you think?
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
Generally speaking, if a black producer produces a rock artist, either one or two things are occurring. One, they're already an artist on their own, like Danger Mouse,
mm-hmm.
so that's okay. Or it's not really their full-time job, like Danger Mouse. Tom Wilson actually was hired to produce records and be A&R. He did for Columbia. Tom Wilson produced a couple of Bob Dylan albums you've heard of. He did Times They Are Changing, Bring It All Back Home. He also did Like a Rolling Stone. You may have heard of that song.
Mm-hmm.
He also produced the Song of Silence for Simon and Garfunkel. Left Columbia, went to Verve, signed Frank Zappa.
Wow.
Produced the first two Zappa albums.
Thanks, Tom.
And then he signed, I'm not sure if he signed, but he definitely produced the first two Velvet Underground albums. Andy Warhol took credit for the first one, but Tom Wilson was there, according to John Cale and Lou Reed. And Tom Wilson has credit officially for producing the second one, which is White Light, White Heat. So if you think about the sonic characteristics of a classic alternative band, black dude.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I did just fact check and look on the album. He did indeed produce it. Not that I didn't believe you.
I know.
But I just wanted to check.
Due diligence.
Fact checking. All right. Well, without any further ado, here is the title track from White Light, White Heat on your Calyx.
Oh, split 'em up. run to it.
Velvet Underground with White Light, White Heat, produced by
Tom Wilson.
I was going to say Tim Wilson because that's someone
a black
I know.
Dude.
Tom, quote, a black dude, Wilson. Well, that was fun to hear. So I am Agapanthus. You're listening to Calyx, and I am still here at the end, sadly, of my interview with Mark Montgomery French. And this has been so great. Thank you for all the calls.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for wonderful. Coming in. So why don't you tee up the next number?
All right. The next number is by Sister Rosetta Tharpe. And Sister Rosetta Tharpe was a gospel singer who also played a mean resonator guitar. And if you look at the big 50 stars like Fats Domino and Chuck Berry, who they got a lot of their sound and verve from was a black lesbian who played guitar.
Well, so she was recently inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame,
yep.
which created a big conversation on the Calyx sort of staff listserv.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that was passed around was an article about her public wedding. Do you know about this?
No, tell me.
There was like a big... it might have been when she was switching to when they were trying to promote her more rock. I don't know. There was some sort of career dip and mm-hmm. then some sort of promotional effort. And so she got married live on stage at like an arena. Like this was before like arena rock shows were a thing. And the guy she married, like she didn't really know, but then she ended up being married to him for the rest of her life. It was like an extravaganza. It was like a show. Like they had the musicians in her band were groomsmen, and there were like backup singers as her bridesmaids, and there was like a lot of performances throughout. And then she did a concert.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and she was a killer guitar player.
Yeah, back when almost nobody had really even heard that electric guitar,
mm-hmm.
and she was ripping out solos. And if you saw Lizzo on SNL. But a month ago, stage left was her guitar player who had the same guitar that Sister Rosetta Tharpe had and wore a big jacket very similar to how Sister Rosetta Tharpe had back in the day.
Wow, that's a good fact. I'm going to play some Lizzo later in the show.
All right.
But right now, I think we're going to listen to Fly Away by Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
Yes, we are.
And thank you again, Mark, for coming in. And why don't you tell us your website address
again? Website address is mmfrench.com, MMFRENCH. And you can see where to go to my show. All Your Favorite Music is Probably Black, February 1st, 2 p.m. at the Alameda Free Library, and February 23rd, 2 p.m. at the San Lorenzo Library, free for all ages.
All right. Thanks again for coming in. And
thank you.
We're going to get back into the best of 2019 shortly on Your Calyx. Here is Sister Rosetta Tharpe. Enjoy.
Some glad morning when this life is o'er. I'm far away. Till that home on God's celestial shore. I'm far away. Sing it out. Fly away. Oh, glory, I fly away. Oh, when I die, hallelujah, by and by, I fly away. Mother, I fly away. Oh, I fly away. Oh, when I die, hallelujah, by and by, I fly away. When the shadows of this life have
tomorrow's morning, I'll fly away.